You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, October 23, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter. Cliff Schechter. Cliff Schechter will be joining us on the program today to go back on the week that was, that still is in many respects. Also on the program today, ostensibly to give me a streaming movie recommendation, our two new producers, so that you can begin to get to know them. It's sort of like Get to Know Us segment. Through their streaming movie suggestion for the weekend, and also Vocal Fry competition. Also on the program today, Biden out. It's basically just A, B, C, Chafee out, or Chaffee, as he's known by news professionals. Meanwhile, the Benghazi hearing, 11 hours of grilling Hillary Clinton, and the Benghazi committee determines for the first time that Trey Gowdy is actually the sweatiest man in Washington, D.C. It's not Marco Rubio. Paul Ryan, he's in, ladies and gentlemen. He's going to run. But based upon how he caved to the Freedom Caucus, what's he going to do when he meets Putin? Oslo.
You will have no time with family.
Whatever you say, Mr. Putin. The Oslo, it looks like, racing out ahead of Madrid, will be the first city in the world, major city, to ban cars. And douchebag funds what? The story of a former Citibank CEO and his wife, who so generously were looking to save a college until they couldn't put their name on the front door. And then, screw it, it's just education. Meanwhile, the GOP Latino groups are saying that they may have a bit of a problem with the Republican Party. And Ben Carson leading in Iowa, according to two polls. We will get to all of those things, ladies and gentlemen. This story, I think I mentioned yesterday that Rand Paul getting a lot of pressure to drop out of the race. The presidential race, because he is apparently faltering pretty badly in his senatorial race. It'll be interesting to see if he drops out before the debate. I doubt he will. He is scheduled to be in the debate. So I can't imagine that he will leave that. But let me just touch on this story of Paul Smith's college, because this is just sort of like I don't know. You know, thank goodness for the billionaires, because they are so philanthropically inclined. I don't know what it is about billionaires that they want to do such good, that it's so much about giving. Yes, they want to give back, ladies and gentlemen. Take, for instance, the case of the Wall Street billionaire Sandy Whale and his wife Joan. $20 million to the college, Paul Smith's College. It is a college that is located upstate in the around the Adirondacks, I believe. And it is a College of Art and Sciences. It was established in the late 30s, early 40s, when Phelps Smith died. He earmarked money and land to build a school, which apparently specializes in things like forestry and I don't know if it's husbandry. Is that what they call it? But forestry stuff.
I think, yeah.
Wildlife. And also hotel.
Rural education.
Hotel management, though, too, I think.
Oh.
And apparently that was because the guy, Phelps Smith's dad, Paul Smith, was a hotelier. And so Sandy Whale and his wife, Joan Whale, wanted to donate $20 million because the school is struggling. It's a tough time for small schools, I guess, that are I don't know. I don't know why this school is, expenses are up. I'm not sure. Well, the problem was that when the money was bequeathed to establish the college, the terms of that money was that the name of the college will be Paul Smith's College. And apparently the college went to a court to ask a judge, hey, can we please just add the names Joan Whale to it? We want it to be Joan Whale Paul Smith's College. Because we really care about education, but we also care about having our names associated with this gift. And apparently the judge said, no, you can't do that. It would break the terms of the will, essentially. And you can't do that. I imagine they just got it. They wanted to go and get the court's opinion because theoretically, I don't know if there was actually a plaintiff here. Who was attempting to stop the college from doing it. But maybe the college just decided, hey, we should get our lawyers to go check it out. Not sure exactly how that worked. But the judge said, no, you can't do that. It would break the will. And so the billionaire, Sandy Whale, and his wife, Joan, said, all right, forget it. We'll find somewhere else where they'll put our name on a thing. Billionaire, ladies and gentlemen. $20 million. Like, literally, I think I spent more on, I don't know, the yogurt I bought for lunch today relative to my net worth from a billionaire and $20 million. Give me a break. But, you know, look, that's the kind of society we need. Let's get rid of all governmental support. Let's get rid of it and just rely on charity and philanthropy. We are the most giving country. American billionaires are the most generous. And except for in this one tiny little situation. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Hey, don't forget, Sportocracy dropped its latest episode. I think it was yesterday. Maybe it was late yesterday. Dave Zirin's on there. And Brian Rich has got a great story. Well, a sad story about.
Yeah, that's not a happy story.
Well, it's not a happy story.
It's a really well told and interesting one.
Yes, I'm not saying it's a happy story, but it's also it's a good story.
We're talking about a child getting upset and heartbroken, by the way.
Well, it's interesting because, that's the thing about kids. You get to relive some of your worst memories as a kid.
I don't have kids, obviously, so I guess I'm not at the point yet where I think it's great to see them suffer.
Yeah. And it's even better when it's other people's kids. There's nothing more comforting than hearing a kid cry and knowing, that's not my kid. It's like that sense of like, because I can hear other babies cry in our kitchen because it's got a vent, and I can't tell which one because there's a bunch of babies in our building. And I hear the kid crying. I'm just like, oh, what a relief. I don't have to do anything. All right, I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Cliff Schechter will be joining us.
I could sleep, I could sleep, I could sleep. When I lived alone, is there a ghost in my house? I could sleep, I could sleep, I could sleep, I could sleep. When I lived alone, is there a ghost in my house? When I lived alone, is there a ghost in my house? My
gentlemen, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, and I think you know what that means. That means that we hear from this guy.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, and it's Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Hello, Samuel. How are you?
I'm doing all right. This has been a crazy week, hasn't it?
How many times have we found ourselves saying that? Yes, this especially has been a crazy week in a lot of ways, man. But we're living in crazy times, Sam. We really are.
I think this week, in many respects, could. This week more than most, I think, is going to have a lot of impact over the next. It could be years. From the perspective of
it's a good contrast week, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. Let's just go over just a laundry list for some of the major developments this week. In addition to, I think, like sort of starting with anticipating Bernie Sanders sort of giving at one point giving a major speech or planning to on what a democratic socialist is. I think that's going to. That could have like major. I'm serious. They have really major implications.
No, I agree. You know, we need to educate people.
We have now lost two Democratic either contenders or would be contenders. The paradox is the guy who was actually declared was less of a had far less of a chance of winning the presidency than the guy who was not declared, but both of them have dropped out, Biden and Chafee.
And then we've got Webb, who may run as an independent, right?
And Webb dropping out this week, who may run as an independent. I want to get your opinion on as to whether or not that's going to have any implications. My guess is no, but
as long as I'm allowed to make jokes along the way, I'll do that.
Of course. And then we had Paul Ryan capitulate to the Freedom Caucus in order to become Speaker of the House, and it appears that he's going to run and that he'll get enough votes. And then we also had Trey Gowdy, who basically gave the country a lesson in how to sweat profusely and enhance a Democratic frontrunner's campaign simultaneously.
Yeah, and I would add a third thing, because you and I have had discussions on this show about my involvement with the Innocence Project and other things. Remember, this guy's a former prosecutor. He gave you another reason, folks, to be very hesitant in your support for any kinds of mandatory minimums, the death penalty, or anything else, if you really believe that prosecutors out there are all honest, objective people just doing the people's work. As we've found from many Republican former prosecutors and judges, that just doesn't seem to be the case.
Indeed. And in fact, yesterday we spoke to Joe Connison, who was telling us about the latest. And I don't know that this actually came up yesterday, to be honest with you. I did not watch. I'm going to concede now. I did not watch all 11 hours of the testimony that they got from Hillary Clinton. But I don't know if it came up that Trey Gowdy had basically put in a false redaction in an email to make it appear that there was a secret that Hillary Clinton had revealed to Sidney Blumenthal or something. He put in a false redaction to make it look like the stuff couldn't be released. It was,
he also added an undercover source, which is something that we know from the Valerie Plame days the Republicans are very good at. They get very angry that Democrats would do anything to jeopardize national security, but this actually seems to be sort of an ongoing habit of theirs.
Let's work our way backwards, shall we? Let's start with Benghazi. And let me just play this clip for you. This is Trey Gowdy. This is after 11 hours of testimony. I mean, you and I, we are old enough that, you know, I don't know. I don't obviously remember any of the Watergate hearings so much as I know that they sort of dominated the news. I do remember sort of some of the big Supreme Court battles with Bork and with Thomas and, well, I mean, all of the Supreme Court nominations. I remember the, Anita Hill coming up in those hearings. I remember Iran-Contra hearings. But I did 11 hours for something, you know, this is not to in any way sort of, I guess, undervalue or underestimate the sort of the tragedy involved in having your ambassador killed, but 11 hours after she's been up in front of this committee two or three times or other committees, this was stunning. And just also sort of like, you know, knowing that this is for political theater for them was a really stupid move. And then it was even made worse when Trey Gowdy admitted this. After the hearing, he's incredibly sweaty. Hopefully it doesn't screw up the audio. But listen to what Trey Gowdy says in a press conference afterwards.
I think some of Jimmy Jordan's questioning. Well, when you say new today, I mean, we knew some of that already. We knew about the emails. In terms of her testimony, I don't know that she testified that much differently today than she has the previous time she testified.
Now, did you? I don't know if you you could hear that.
I could not hear that. No.
Oh, okay. We'll play it again.
New things you learned today.
I think some of Jimmy Jordan's questioning. When you say new today, I mean, we knew some of that already. We knew about the emails. In terms of her testimony, I don't know that she testified that much differently today than she has the previous time she testified.
So there you have Trey Gowdy being asked, what did you learn that was new today? And he goes, new today? Well, we heard, Jim Jordan had some good questions, and but I don't know that she testified any differently today than any other time.
Right.
And,
I mean, it's a farce and one that should be somehow ended. Because clearly they're just trying to drag this out and get it as close to the presidential election as possible. And she literally just kicked their butts in every way. I mean, speaking of Jim Jordan, I thought he had some good questions. It was a nice one when she let him know how it was a shame that the actual facts didn't fit his preconceived narrative. I mean, I thought, you know, how she handled this group of barbarians was very good. They played exactly the role they always play. I mean, literally, it's so predictable with them, and it's so easy. Just let them talk, you know? Let them do what they need to do, you know? And it's kind of like with the Planned Parenthood hearings, especially if there's a woman sitting opposite them. They will do their best, because they're big, tough guys, after all, to bully and interrupt. They interrupted her something like 50 or 60 times while she was speaking. I mean, what is just a sad, sad group of people. Honestly.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you're a prosecutor and you don't have a plan to in any way bring out new information, why do you have an 11-hour hearing? I mean, do you anticipate that Hillary Clinton was going to get up there and you were going to ask the same questions and somehow she's going to go, well, you know, to be honest with you, Chairman, I've never said this before, but of course I planned Benghazi. Of course we did. I was afraid that Chris Stevens was going to find out about Vince Foster, and of course
right.
we planned Benghazi. I mean, what is it?
When this we were running drugs out of Menlo Airport, Menlo Airport, remember that? Mena
right,
Airport,
yes.
Mena Airport, isn't it? In Arkansas, we ran them through Nicaragua all the way up over to Libya. And obviously Ambassador Stevens found out about that. So on my hit list, starting off was Vince Foster. It ended with him. So now I'm done. And along the way, we also had some problems in the travel office and with our Christmas invite list.
Yes, and the only reason why I'm telling you now.
Every stupid-ass scandal by these people, you know, if we could work into. I mean, they just can't be trusted with government. I mean, we're fundamentally in a really kind of a. I mean, obviously we're in a bad place because we have. It's not. We've talked about people who don't, you know, who don't believe in governing, but it's worse than that.
Cliff.
Go ahead.
I think these guys actually believe. I mean, this is the amazing thing is that I think that this isn't just. I mean, this is not something that you can manufacture. I think they're living in such a bubble that they actually thought like there was something to be gained out of this, right? I mean, because there's just, you know, that level of stupidity, of political stupidity, I think they just genuinely thought, and here's the thing, they don't even have a theory about this conspiracy, right? It's not like we didn't really land on the moon, okay? We've seen the images of the moon, but we didn't really land on the moon. It was faked. And now we're just going to find the evidence for it. No, they don't have a... They don't have an end theory. They don't even have a thesis. The only one is that they say that the Obama administration did not go full force within days announcing something, their genuine conclusions about what this was, because they were worried about the politics. That's it. And I can tell you, That is a huge stretch. You have to completely divorce yourself from the way that most often these intelligence findings are assessed over the course of 6 or 7 days.
Right.
And you have to divorce yourself from the reality on the ground that there was, in fact, protests and not quite terrorist attacks, but certainly violence that was initiated because of that video. All of that is true. They just think, and they want somehow, I don't know.
But, no, but Sam, it's bigger than that, and it's stupider than that. You have to divorce yourself from the reality that the world is a dangerous place, and these types of things happen all the time. It's sort of the old thing about, you know, people, anybody, you know, when they say a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich, right? Because if you can sit there and you can question somebody, and I mean, in any of our lives, in anything we do, there are going to be inconsistencies sometimes. Nobody's perfect, right? And if you want to just sit there and smear somebody, you ever see the movie The Insider where they talk about that, you know, where, I mean, the tobacco industry, not so far away from what. So, I mean, it's just not that hard to do when you get the opportunity to sit there and play prosecutor and act ridiculous like this. But it's funny because we never did this for 9/11, right? Not in this manner. It was bipartisan, cooperative, and 3,000 people died, and Bush had 60-plus warnings, and he installed somebody at NSA who clearly was incapable and had no understanding of her job. And, I mean, if the types of questions had ever even come close to being asked about 9/11 than about this, the number of scandals that would have come out, from Rudy Giuliani putting his anti-terrorism task force in the building that had been bombed before in New York. So the reason he was out in the streets looking all Churchillian that day, because he had no headquarters.
And why did he put it there?
A contributor of his wanted him to put it in that damn building. I mean, that would have been a scandal, right?
Because his contributor wanted in that building. He wanted to be in New York so he could maintain his affair with the woman who will ultimately become his wife.
And they're busy hitting Hillary Clinton apparently on not being, you know, not answering Ambassador Stevens' requests, not quickly enough. What about 60-plus warnings that something was going to happen and not doing anything and choosing to go on vacation at that very time for a month to talk to really think hard about stem cells on the ranch? And somebody who refused to sit down with Richard Clark and Condi Rice, who just kept saying like a parrot, Russia, 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 Russia. And we can go on because,
I want to ask, wait a second.
Head.
I want to ask.
Can you imagine? I mean, if that equivalent was put to this, we'd have like a 3-year-long hearing.
Now, I don't want to put Matt
so
on the spot. Hold
indicted.
On for one second. I don't want to put Matt on the spot. But Matt, when 9/11 happened, new Matt, this is new Matt. Oh, Cliff, you're not even aware that we have new people in the studio.
You got rid of one Matt for another?
Yes. It was much easier that way. I didn't have to change any name tags. So we literally have
totally
a new Matt
here.
And we have a new Kelly here in studio. And new Matt
is Brooks still there?
Brooks is still here, yes, but
okay,
we don't. We took away his microphone.
Good work.
New Matt was 10 on 9/11, right? Is that right?
Yeah, thereabouts, I think.
Okay, now let me ask you this, New Matt. Now New Matt is all over the web. He's a prodigious writer. Reader.
What's
I should
Matt's
say.
New Matt's last name, so I can see his prodigious.
I have no idea. I'm not even recognizing last names here because then I have to.
So he just goes by New Matt.
New
you're
Matt.
Saying. That's how I'll find his stuff.
And
okay.
No, he's a reader. I should say he reads. We will talk about that later in the program. Matt's little reading habit, but Matt. So Matt may have come across this. Do you know, now this was the third or fourth time that Hillary Clinton has testified in front of a Benghazi committee. Yesterday was 11 hours. Do you know how long George Bush testified to, in private or in public, to the 9/11 commission?
Was it 0 hours?
One hour.
Oh, yeah, that was with the families, right? And so he could use it.
No, it was with Dick Cheney sitting there next to him. Holding his hand.
I'm trying to remember. Were they
private.
Even under oath at the time?
No.
I'm not sure they were.
No. And it was in private.
Yeah, of course. I mean, can you just imagine? I mean, look, you know, the thing that gets me so angry is that these guys actually harm our country immeasurably in ways we know and ways we will never know. With their behavior, and obviously some of the ways we know with what these guys have done with Hillary Clinton, you know, outing somebody who is undercover and all the sorts of stupid things that they've done during this wasting, was it $4.5 million of taxpayer money that could better be spent on anything, you know? So there's that. But we'll really never know a lot of things about 9/11 because, again, in putting themselves before the country, they covered up so much. And we'll never know where a lot of these failures went on. But we do know there were a whole bunch of things going on, including, you know, I mean, if we're just talking about what people claimed at the time, which is apparently a standard these guys can use. Hey, somebody said X. Hearsay worked for their hearings today. Well, Dick Cheney said at some point that because Bush was not there at the time, that he could have ordered aircraft being shot down. That's a serious constitutional problem. Did anybody ever follow up and ask questions about that? Of course not. Right. I mean, you know, between the role that Bush played and Condi, I mean, anybody ask why Bush chose to sit there for 7 minutes frozen in a damn classroom when every single minute counted? at a time when, you know, how much time was between the first plane and second plane were hit? Not a lot of time. 19 minutes, or I don't remember. It's probably something a little more than that. But he got to sit there. I mean, I'm just saying, if you apply the standard, they just applied to Hillary, where four people were killed in one of the most dangerous regions of the world, to downtown New York City, where something like this was never supposed to happen, and the warnings and everything else. I mean, you know, these people would have all been impeached, probably. Or they would have, some of them probably would have gone to prison. Certainly, there's no way they would have been reelected, and frankly, that history would have continued the way it did with them. And that's what's so, you know, that's what's so angering about all of this, is that these guys, they're so shameless. They're so just pathetic. It's bad enough that we never got to the truth of something that really was a national tragedy and something where we could have learned a lot and done better in the future. But now they take this, something that happened. You know, how many embassies were attacked while Bush was in office? Many of them. Obviously, even while Clinton was in office, the USS Cole attack. I mean, and other things. I mean, we've never given this scrutiny to anything close to this, because things like that in foreign territories, they happen. It's terrible. It doesn't mean you can't learn anything, but the kind of joke that this has been, with the constant hearings and the 11 hours, and I mean, you know, I mean, are there any Republicans who give a damn about this country anymore before their party, or is that just all gone? I mean, I don't know, but it's sad.
And, you know, I mean, I have my own suspicions about what was going on at Benghazi. It's a combination, I think, of Chris Stevens, frankly, being a little bit cowboyish. And doing stuff, you know, there's a certain latitude for ambassadors, particularly in a situation like that, where they can put themselves in more risk of harm than is probably advisable, and there's not a lot that other people can do about it. And frankly, I'm also not convinced that there wasn't more CIA stuff going on there that the government doesn't want to talk about. And I don't know that how much Chris Stevens did or did not have to do with that. But,
right,
you know, which in my mind makes what they're doing even more despicable in some way, because I'm perfectly open for an investigation to, like, just exactly what was going on in Libya, broadly speaking.
I'm not even open to that. I would want that.
Right. But
the problem is that, boy, by what these people have done to government, I can't trust that that will ever take place.
Well, no, of course. I'm not convinced that they don't know that there are secrets there that no one can express. And so the reason why you can't get some answers to some of this stuff has to do with the fact that the CIA shut it down or prohibited certain things or are trying to hide certain things. And the Republicans know this. And so there's this game of, like, you can't explain, you know, I couldn't even follow the hearings enough to really get a notion of if there was even any questions like that. But I can't help but think that part of this whole calculation is, oh, they'll never be able to explain this without revealing something that the CIA doesn't want them to explain. So this is going to be perfect for us. We could actually talk about this for 4 or 5 years. And
right.
in fact,
right. and I mean, you're, and that's, I don't think that that's, you know, I think the conclusions you've come to, I mean, we can't know, but they certainly, there's some logical basis supporting them from what we know about what's gone on. But I would say, even if there were classified things and there were things that we couldn't know, you know, having a bipartisan committee, you know, if you could find one of the maybe 6 sane Republicans left in the House, and do it, would be a helpful thing. We should want to know, just like we should have wanted to know with all of these past tragedies, because we don't want our people getting killed. If they don't have to get killed, it's a pretty obvious thing, actually. But, you know, that's I guess what I'm saying here. Beyond all the partisan garbage and all the harping on social issues that their crazy white male rural religious nut base cares about, that most of this country has gotten beyond, you know, and all the economics assaults on everybody who's not in the top 1% and everything else. Beyond that, we can't even have honest conversations and honest hearings and look into, you know, what mistakes were made in our national security to save people's lives, because you can't fucking you can't trust them. I guess this one won't go on radio, regular radio, will it? Mm. But you just can't trust these people to do anything honest at all.
No station that you're not partly an owner of. So, Cliff, let me put
it on with that in there. Let's see if we can get me kicked out of my own station. That would be kind of cool.
Let's talk about this notion of bipartisanship as we traverse down Pennsylvania Avenue to the White House, where the day before we had Joe Biden in his announcement that he was not going to run for the presidency.
Yeah.
Chastise Clinton, not by name. And I should say, this is what's sort of amazing, is that the idea that I am even sitting here, expending energy defending Hillary Clinton is a masterstroke by Trey Gowdy. I mean, touche.
actually, in a manner of speaking, by Joe Biden, because I think you're about to defend her again, if I'm right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, he's wrong. And
he's more than wrong. And frankly,
after all of this, he still sees the world that way. I have a lot of sympathy for Joe Biden because of his son, like any other sympathetic human being, and really the family tragedies he's endured. He's been terrific on a number of issues. One of them I care deeply about, which is gun safety. Others that I care a lot about, as you could say, part of a family, like family and medical leave and other things. He shares that horrendous vote in Iraq with Hillary. He pushed that thing along, and that was a terrible, terrible bill. So there are things he'd have to answer for there. But
2011. The biggest is the 2011 fiscal cliff deal.
Even worse than all of that, Sam, because the worst thing to me about President Obama in those first couple years was not any specific policy. It was his willingness to treat this group of poofling monkeys who showed themselves again and again to be who they were as a legitimate partner, and to legitimize them with what he said and delegitimize everyone together when he would blame quote-unquote Congress for things and people in Washington and whatever, that everybody was equally at fault and he was above that. And this just reminded me of that with Joe Biden. I have a lot of respect for the guy, but at the same time, when you get up there and you say, they're not our enemies, we can deal with them. No, you can't. Okay, are you watching the hearings going on? I mean, these are not people that can be dealt with, right? A virus has taken over one of our two major parties. And yes, there's some good people mixed into that party, generally not in higher up positions, who here and there do good things. But overall, the culture of that party is what we saw on display during the Benghazi hearing. And if you go into any endeavor and rely upon them for goodwill, you will get screwed again and again. And how he has not learned that just tells me, I'm really glad that he's not running, because I couldn't support him.
Yeah, and that was, part of what he did is went behind Harry Reid's back and basically, made this bipartisan deal, which I think is just it was just horrible. And so in many respects, I'm glad that was his sign off, because he reminded people why we don't want him in the race.
Right.
One
of my favorite things about Hillary Clinton is that she's willing to call them what they are and at least sees them for what they are. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Listen, that's the thing, is that, in some respects, and I don't want to say this is the best thing I can say about Hillary Clinton, but I will say that I think she has two qualities that this is not an endorsement in any way. But she has
They're going to grab this, and use this. Like, and we were endorsed by Sam.
She has two qualities that I think, in the event that she becomes the nominee, will be what I. Because you always need a kernel of hope, right? I mean, for Obama, it was that he was actually sitting in those pews with Reverend Wright. Turns out, I don't think he was. But that was my talisman. With Hillary Clinton, it's two things. It's one, like you say, her willingness and her sense that it actually can be advantageous to her to be partisan. Right. And an awareness of just how low or how bad things can get with these people. And the second is because that's all well and good. But the thing is, I don't appreciate, I think, a lot of her politics in many respects. But the second thing is that I also think that she realizes that because there's that dynamic with Republicans, that she has a little bit more sense of political expediency and understanding of where the power to protect her lies, and therefore can be pushed by the left in a way that I think President Obama wasn't. Like, I think President Obama, I think President Obama took it as a sort of point of pride to sometimes basically stand up to the left and say no.
Right,
just
he was a sensible village, you know, responsible centristy. I agree with you. Whereas let me add an addendum to that too, which is not only can she do what is in the interest of the left because of that, because she can be pushed and she has been already on a number of issues.
Yep.
But she actually doesn't always need to be pushed because she's politically savvy enough to see the advantage in tempting the other side to overreach, which they do every time. She knows if she pushes a little bit on something, they lose their collective schmadoinkle and just go nuts.
Their collective schmadoinkle, folks. I want to see a meme drawn up of that. Like some type of those like Facebook pictures with...
I stole that from South Park. I mean, I can't claim it to be my own.
All right. I'm sorry to hear that.
I do that here and there.
There we go.
I borrow.
Stop the meme factory. Get all the people in our meme division to stop what they're doing and reverse it. We'll come up with something else. All right. Well, so Biden's out. Chafee's out. Let's play a clip.
Can I say something interesting about Chafee, though? On the way out of the race, actually, and what he put out there today, I don't know if it was as evident to people because he didn't, nobody could understand why he was running. He'd not been a Democrat until recently, and not in the manner that Bernie Sanders had always been an independent and really the equivalent of a very left Democrat. But Chafee had been on a journey to the left. But, it turned out a lot of what he was talking about in dropping out was about peace and about avoiding war. And it seemed like those would have been the main themes. And I wouldn't mind a candidate who could more forcefully and aggressively make that argument, about not having the need to get involved in every foreign excursion. I think that would be a good thing. It's not to say that Bernie doesn't talk about that, but Bernie's basis for running is more on economic fairness. Whereas I wouldn't have minded if Chafee weren't who Chafee is, which is somebody who's unable to kind of put two sentences together, being able to stay in and really push issues of peace, because I think that would be helpful. So I'll say that one thing is kind of a shame. And that it's a shame because I didn't even know that was mostly what he was running on, because he couldn't articulate that when he stood up and debated the other night. It sounded more like he just was hitting Hillary Clinton on her ethics. You know what I mean? So in any case.
Yes, he ran. I mean, that's the thing about Chafee is that he ran a not very smart campaign, even for a guy who thought maybe he thought he was going to win, but for a guy who was in there to carry a message, what was his message? It wasn't a good, there was no message. I mean, why do you spend time when you announce your candidacy, you know you're an underdog, why do you talk about the metric system? Honestly, I'm serious.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
The opportunity, you have the money to loan yourself, whatever. He loaned himself 400 grand. He had an opportunity to get up there, to sit on that stage and to deliver a message and to get people to show up at his news conference when he announces. And you talk about the metric system. I mean, God, man, grow up.
No, and especially when you're thinking about the current challenges.
I like the metric system, but
right.
Seriously.
And you're thinking about the current challenges with Iran, and you're thinking, about making sure this deal stays, and the kinds of things that are still coming out of Bibi Netanyahu's mouth, which will until we're hopefully one day rid of him and the Israeli leadership. And you're thinking about some of the moves that Russia's made and some of the noises for war from the usual suspects here. John McCain, there's no missile he wouldn't ride on into a foreign country. So, I mean, it would have been nice to have a voice as eloquent as Bernie's is on economic issues, on issues of war and peace.
I mean, look, here's the thing. If you feel like you need to talk about every single issue, then basically what you should do is just build your own podcast. It's very easy to do. I could have sat Chafee down and I could have had him do it in half an hour. He could be putting out a show every day if he wanted. It would take a little bit more to have the musical elements like we have here and all the repartee, the witty repartee, huge fan base. But nevertheless, but if you're going to run for president,
line insertion of Matt's.
Indeed, but if you're going to run for president as the peace candidate. You don't need to talk about the metric system in your announcement, even if you think it's really valuable. So here is...
It'll solve itself, that whole metric system.
Here is the one clip. Here is the one clip that we have pulled from his announcement as he is going up on the stage at the DNC Women's Leadership Forum to announce that he is not running. Here is the one clip that we pulled.
Ladies and gentlemen, Governor Lincoln Chafee.
Chafee. There it is. Just Governor Lincoln Chafee. I feel like that space was wasted because he didn't really think about what he was doing. And, you know, that is part of the problem with the people who run campaigns like that. You know, Jim Webb, to a certain extent, the same thing. You know, that he could be an eloquent voice for some specific things to introduce.
Like the Confederate flag.
Well, sadly.
I mean, he's been at least offstage a semi-eloquent voice for that. I'm having fun, of course.
No, but I agree.
There are issues that he brought up that when he ran for the Senate, it's been a steady devolution, sadly, for Jim Webb, because he went from an exciting Senate candidate to a so-so senator to a kind of goofy presidential candidate to now a crank.
Right.
And that's a shame because he did have a good voice in some issues and he had a great sort of resume for telling those stories. And now, he's lost. So I agree. He could have been another one.
He could have been a very strong proponent for less war. And and we certainly, in this race, in the Democratic race, that's what's missing. Is, because we have Bernie is pulling Hillary to the left, and hopefully he gets a little bit more specific and draws some distinctions between Hillary and he in the next debate, because that way Hillary has to move even further to the left, or she has to clarify. But there was none of that. We had none of that because, you know, frankly, you know, like you say, Bernie is not he's not a highlight. His foreign policy is not necessarily the highlight.
Right. I mean, war and peace is part of what he talks about, but obviously where his basis is, it's sort of like if you want somebody making the argument for choice, he's for that, or gay marriage, he's for that, or he's for a lot of good, great things. But the thing he focuses on, and frankly, it's one of the key things we need somebody focusing on, so this is good, are economic issues. It would have been great to have somebody, because I think right now, you know, a few of these other issues we're talking about, particularly war and peace, are obviously as important, because we're looking at a major agreement and we're looking at a lot of people still trying to disrupt it and do anything to undermine it, and it would have been helpful. But
and we should say that in the Reuters piece that was written about Chafee dropping out, I will read you this sentence. You tell me what's wrong with it. Chafee's decision narrows the Democratic field to three candidates: former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Senator Bernie Sanders, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. Clinton continues to hold a commanding lead in national polls. What's wrong with that two sentences?
Is this a test?
It is a test. This is a pop quiz.
Hillary. I have no idea.
Lawrence Lessig. Lawrence Lessig, ooh, still in the race, ladies and gentlemen. And
that's a great point. And I even, you know, he was on Bill Maher last Friday. Have you had him on your show?
No, I haven't had him on my show. I interviewed him for Ring of Fire, actually, and I've been meaning to play that. I mean, I was a little bit, I'm a big fan of his, and certainly of his work, and of his. I think that his run in the Democratic Party is ill-conceived and has also been ill-executed. I mean, I'm curious, you know, what answers are he going to give? And I hope he gets on the next debate. I think he probably deserves to be there. Certainly, if Chafee and Webb were there last time, he deserves to be there this time. But,
sure. I have no problem with him running. I agree with you. I think it's been executed badly. I don't see him at all. I don't know what he's doing at all. But I think running to highlight the issue of campaign finance reform, which is obviously another, no shortage of important issues these days, would be good. It's just how you do it. And
The sad part is going to be he's going to say there's no other candidate up here who is running. Because he's now, it used to be he was going to quit the job of president after he got the campaign finance reform legislation passed. And now I guess he's given up on that and he's actually going to just be the president after he gets elected and get campaign finance reform passed. And after that, I think he's going to, everybody needs to have a unicorn farm in their backyard. I'm not exactly sure what's next after that. But when he's on stage, what is he going to say at this debate? I'm not running because I'm the only candidate who is for campaign finance reform. I'm running because I am, when I say campaign finance reform, I capitalize all the letters. That's the thing. It's like Bernie Sanders and he, and I don't know if Clinton does, but Bernie Sanders and he, at the very least, have, as far as I can tell, almost identical positions on it. If he's now running to be president, the full-on president, how is he different from Bernie Sanders? Because he's got to have other policies too that I think people are going to want to hear about.
I think they've all put out pretty strong campaign finance reform proposals. I mean, I'm sure there's differences in them, and I haven't compared them all, but I think they have. I think it's a pretty standard position at this point.
All right, let's talk about Paul Ryan. I know we're going a little bit late here, folks, but bear with us. Paul Ryan gets out at the beginning of the week. He says, and I described it as basically he's offered a wedding proposal. He got down on his knees, or maybe he didn't because he wasn't going to do that. And he said, please marry me to the Republican caucus, but only if you sign this prenup. Otherwise, I'm not offering you a wedding ring. So I'm giving you this wedding ring. I've tied a little string to it, and it's attached to a pen, which you need to use to sign the prenup. And the bride, in this case, the Freedom Caucus, said, well, yeah, we'll take the ring, but we're not going to sign the prenup. And then Paul Ryan says, okay.
Prenups, shmeenups.
Exactly. And, here's my question to you, Cliff Schechter.
Yes, sir.
How can we trust Paul Ryan? If he doesn't stand up to the Freedom Caucus, how can we trust him to stand up to Vladimir Putin?
Or Al-Qaeda. I mean, or the many members of the Muslim Brotherhood currently in our government.
Of course.
I don't know. It's a matter of time. I would say that if I thought that Paul Ryan were a smart person, that he would have had to agree to do this, he would have had to get assurances from at least enough members of the Freedom Caucus behind the scenes to know that he could pass needed measures and not shut the government down over defunding Planned Parenthood and not have a debt ceiling blow up and some of these things. That's if he's a smart man. But, maybe he wants this on his political epitaph at the end that he was a Speaker of the House, and he started rethinking the straight ride to the eventual lobbying gravy train, and that president is never happening for him. I don't know.
Let me ask
because
you this.
Otherwise, I don't really get it, because these people, whatever their agreements are not going to listen. They all know how to preen for the camera now. They've learned a lot from Ted Cruz. And there will be moments where a number of them will just say, I just can't support him, just the way that they couldn't endorse him. And certain people like Ted Cruz won't even call him a conservative, because now at this point, even he's not conservative enough. He's going into a minefield, and I couldn't wish it on anybody else, as much as I do on him. So good luck. Godspeed. Have fun.
Now, do we know when the vote for the Speaker of the House is going to be? Does anybody know?
I do not.
Because here's my theory on the debt ceiling, right? Is that Ryan plays this out. Now, I'm not convinced that he thought that he I think that he probably thought that maybe the Freedom Caucus would go in and they'd say, no way. And he'd wipe his hands and walk away from it. and say, I tried to lead this Republican Party. They wouldn't be led by me now, setting up his presidential run in 8 years, right? I mean, or but they ended up basically outsmarting him, saying, oh, yeah, we'll support you for Speaker, but not on your terms. And he was sort of stuck at that point. And basically said, oh, good, great. I'll be okay, good. Now, I'm not convinced that they're going to get around to voting before the debt ceiling is up. Because my understanding of the debt ceiling is up in the first week or so of November. And maybe what they'll do is they'll stall a little bit and have Speaker Boehner maintain his position. And then and then come out. Now, it's tough to say. Right now, according to Representative Thomas Massey, who was on Glenn Beck's show, take it for what it's worth, the vote's going to be sometime at the end of next week. So we'll see. Maybe Paul Ryan's first move will be to, you know, raise the debt ceiling. And then we'll see, probably his second one will be saying, I've got to resign now.
Exactly. And we can all cover that and laugh and enjoy.
It's going to be interesting.
It is. It certainly is. So I assume you're about to kick me off.
Yes.
So I figured, what the hell? I'll leave with a breaking news segment, which is...
Hold on. Wait. 1 second. All right. Go ahead, Cliff. What do you got?
Agree or disagree, I give this to you objectively, the folks at AFSCME have just voted to endorse Hillary Clinton in the primary, which is actually a pretty big deal because they have lots of people. So you could say that her good week just got a little bit better.
Wow.
That news just broke, yeah.
That's not good for Bernie Sanders. I mean, you got to have the unions, right, behind you?
It's not helpful to Bernie Sanders, no.
And AFSCME, of course, is the it's like a big teachers union, and yes, or is it just all public services, just in general?
Yes, they've got it's basically a lot of it's a lot of government employees is what it is. There's a lot of them,
and people should know obviously that the public sector unions are the biggest. The biggest unions that we have in this country. Lee Saunders, president, I would say
that that's a bit of a surprise and not something I was expecting to see.
A little bit earlier. Early. I mean, it is a little bit early, right? I mean, we haven't even heard Bernie Sanders for the next thing, but I guess this is exactly.
It's amazing. I mean, she had a great week, sure. But to do it right after just one great week like this, after you could say a couple bad months, is a very, very interesting move to me. I'm surprised. But it just came across Twitter, and as you know, everything on Twitter is true.
There you go. All right.
No, I mean, a bunch of people had it up, so I'm pretty sure it's accurate. I could be wrong, but I think it's accurate.
All right. Well, it is. That's tough for Bernie Sanders. It is sort of a strange time to do it, unless it's sort of like a function of Joe Biden dropping out and basically, you know, the Clinton people saying, like, we need this now. We want to shut the door and leave, you know, we'll leave a little bit.
Well, you feel like with three candidates, essentially, if you want to call Biden a candidate just for a second, not, you know, gone this week and the kind of debate she had in the Benghazi hearing, my guess is they pushed for it hard on her side. You know, sort of everybody starting to come together behind her. Of course, that's what her people want. I got to say.
Right.
Though,
and from Clinton's perspective, they may never have a single better 2 week period. Right. I mean, this has been sort of an extraordinary 2 weeks. It's not even full 2 weeks. Right. For Clinton.
Right.
Between.
But I still say I'm surprised because Bernie, it's not like he's had a bad 2 weeks.
Right.
She's just had a great 2 weeks. He had a solid debate, too. And I don't know. It is what it is. I don't make these decisions.
No, you don't, Cliff. And that's
people—that's
my greatest lament. That's my greatest lament. They may,
but I do decide to come on this show, and that is my non-lament. And
yeah, so that makes me feel like maybe you're smarter than they are. But Cliffy,
perhaps.
As always, a pleasure. We will talk to you next weekend, next Friday.
Yes, sir.
And you know what? Maybe we'll touch base before then regarding the debate, the big Republican debate.
The CNBC one. Yeah, that could be fun.
We will we'll work out the plans over the next couple of days.
I'm excited to hear about the Republican economic plans. I think they're going to be diverse, completely stuff you know you never thought they'd do. I mean, it won't just be like cutting taxes on rich people. I promise.
I mean, I think, look, the number one plan is you have to defund Planned Parenthood. That's what's been dragging
That's where you get the money for the yacht tax, tax repeal. Yeah.
We'll talk to you soon. Cliff Schechter, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Now, we do not, as far as I can tell, have a – wait a second. Do we? Oh, we do. We have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. Did you not see it? All right. That's all right. I will play this off of my computer. Let's play this Jimmy Reefer Cake song, and then you ready? You got my computer up? Let's try it.
Four. Only four Americans died in the attacks in Benghazi. Now they're trying to blame it all on a little old Hillary. 11 hours of testimony. It doesn't make any sense. Are the Republicans and the American people really that dense? Then it occurs to me that Hillary should really be saying thanks. This is all just a distraction from us knowing that she's in bed with the big banks. It's making Hillary look good, and it's making me mad. There are so many more real reasons that little old Hillary's bad. A bad choice for president, 'cause you can't trust a hypocrite. So they keep distracting us with the attacks. I'm sick of it. They all got these crazy scandals that they talk about Hillary. It's just a distraction from the real hypocrisy, as far as I can see.
All right. Jimmy Reefer Cake, another one completely on point this week. I don't think musically it was necessarily the best of the Jimmy Reefer Cakes, but in terms of addressing the week's news, I thought that was pretty good. Trey Gowdy, Hillary sleeper agent, maybe, right? It's possible.
I would think so.
Wow, here's my plan. This is what I'm going to do. Around hour three, I'm going to have drank a tremendous amount of fluids. And what I'm intending to do is I've got one of those, like, hot pocket things where you put it in your pocket and you keep your hands warm. I've got, like, six of them. I've rubbed them all over my chest. I've got them taped to my body. And the plan is I'm going to start sweating, like, just a tremendous amount of sweat. You'll see me right from the beginning. I'll start to lick my upper lip. And I'm going to drink my sweat on national television. And then I'm just going to keep sweating. And then I'm going to talk about the most inane things you ever imagined. Like, you can't even, like, I'll just pull it out of nowhere. It's like, hey, what about that time somebody called you on the night of, where were you on October 4th, 1973? And I'm just going to, and then here's the other thing I'm going to keep doing. Every time she looks at a piece of paper, I'm going to say, are you looking at a piece of paper? Go ahead. Take a look at that piece of paper. Because, you know, the American public hates it when people take notes, right? Because that's the big girl thing to do. Oh, go on, look at your notes. Oh, I see you got your notes. Oh, all right, go ahead. Take a look at your notes. Why don't you send them over here? I'll sweat all over them. That, I'm convinced, was the Trey Gowdy plan, and I gotta say, gets a 10.
Well, thank you for all the work that you've done for us, Trey.
Totally nails it.
The pain of having to be in the Republican caucus for this many years, to have to act like you're actually that stupid, sweaty, pathetic, all to help Hillary and the Clinton Global Initiative. Well, I cannot convey my appreciation more. And if anybody sees this conversation happen, you're going to need to kill them in whatever means you desire and then drag their body to the park.
Well, that's what I was that also there's an alternate theory was that he's not just he's a sleeper agent for them. And that's why he was so sweaty, is that he was actually just coming back from dragging a body to the park.
Ray, I hope that body's disposed of before the hearings, you bastard. I'm trying the best I can, Mr. President. I owe you. You're nothing. You're just a little fish-like specimen. I can dispose of it any time. I'm literally drunk with power. You're nothing. I like that. He's just like really abusive to him. You're like our Gollum. Now shut up. Make it back for the Benghazi hearing, you fish scale face sweaty bastard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Well, I have another. Oh, my God.
You're not fit to look at me or my wife. Keep your eyes averted.
Keep your eyes on the ground.
Keep your eyes on the Demetri and Benghazi hearings.
Don't even look. Don't even look up at me. All right. Well, you know what? Let's do. I guess we're doing a Freebie Friday, and we'll move directly into. We'll take some phone calls in just a moment, but in the meantime, what I would like to do. Oh, there you go. There's my. I'm dialing into the phone system. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at. Majority FM or via the app. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. So, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have new producers on this program. And first, let's introduce, let's see, what I feel like I should have some type of... some type of music to introduce these guys. Let's see if I can come up with a I couldn't get it up. I was trying to get some oh, here we go. Let's see if this works. No, that's an ad. That doesn't work.
Really?
Bear with me. What's that?
A Mentos ad maybe?
Play a Mentos ad to introduce people? No, there it is. I got it. This actually should have been one for old Matt, but instead we'll do it for new Matt just because I know. This is the WWF and E Monday Night Raw theme song. Ladies and gentlemen, want to introduce our new producers here at the Majority Report. Matt Lech. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yeah, it's Lech, like it rhymes with tech, the abbreviation for technology.
Matt Lech rhymes with tech. And Kelly, you know what? We should really hook up Kelly's mic, too. Kelly Carey rhymes with... Mary?
Scary.
Scary. You got to talk into the mic.
Scary.
Scary. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Matt and Kelly are here. Matt is handling the audio. Kelly handling the video, amongst other duties. Michael, I don't know what he's doing, to be honest with you. Honestly, he's just sitting there complaining about his computer, borrowing other people's computers. I have no idea what he's doing.
What?
Obviously, people will get to know you guys better as the days and weeks and hours go on. However, what I'd like to start off with is for you. Now, I don't know if you guys realize this is how this segment started, is that because I have a family and two kids, one who's now 2.5 and one who's 10, I no longer have an opportunity to go out to movies because Well, now, Kelly, you have a theory as to why people don't go to movies. So why don't we start with you? Because I don't go to movies because I hire a babysitter and then go to a movie. It's the whole, by the time the night's done, it's $90 just flushed down the toilet, as far as I'm concerned. And half the time I get mad at the movies I watch anyway. So, but you have a different reason why you don't go to the movies.
Yeah, it's not so much a theory. It's more like a fact.
A fact.
Yeah.
All right, ready, folks, to have your movie going get destroyed? What is the fact?
Yeah, I did not want to talk about this, but I'll destroy everyone's movie going. In New York, it's commonly held belief that...
Well, wait a second. A commonly held belief doesn't sound like a fact.
I mean, people still go to the movies. It's not as though the movie theaters are just empty.
But wait, you're stating this as a fact as opposed to a commonly held belief.
It's written about all the time.
It's written about all the time. All
yes.
right. Where is this? Like in WorldNet Daily. We don't even know what you're talking about yet. Because of the Jews.
I know. Well, because I don't want to talk.
Kelly, be careful. You've said a lot of weird things about the Jews off air already. And I just before things get uncomfortable here. Okay, go ahead.
What is it, Kelly?
Is this the Jew theory of movie theaters, Kelly?
Please don't say that. No, it's bed bugs. That you can get bed bugs because they're cloth seats and they're heavily trafficked areas. And I do not go to them. There's one movie theater that I've gone to in the past year and a half. A couple of times when my dad's visited.
And
it's a different sort of movie theater. Nighthawk in Brooklyn, you get served food.
And you're saying they're bed bugs there.
Can I just say really, really quickly?
Wait, I don't understand.
Bed bugs is an incredibly derogatory term for Jewish people.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Really inappropriate. Yeah. Well, now there was a report. I'm looking in the news. There was a report of bed bugs. A bed bug scare at Times Square AMC Empire 25 Theater just a month ago. Times Square Theater had moviegoers scratching for answers after they... I love that. Crows briefly in 2010. One patron told the Daily News that she even saw one of the flesh-hungry bugs clawing nearby when she went to go see a showing of The Perfect Guy. She noticed a few bites out of caution. She stripped out of her clothes before going back to a Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, my gosh. What?
Wow. So I don't know if they did a inspection or what, but I don't know what happened after that. That's in the New York Post.
Well,
I don't want to get sued here for saying anybody's got bed bugs.
No, it happens. The bed bugs, there are various different places that I avoid because of bed bugs.
Like banks also, various financial centers, places with a lot of people involved in mathematics or law.
Secondhand clothing stores, you need to wash the clothes before you take them to your home.
Before you take them to your home, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're very worried about bed bugs. I understand it. Back in the day during Break Room Live, Marin had bed bugs in his apartment. In Queens, and it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare to be around.
Synagogues.
Now I've got something for you guys. I got something for you to worry about too. Lice report at my daughter's school. Mm-hmm. Head lice. So everybody, keep your hair in buns, please, around here. Now let's go. All right. So Matt. Let's talk about, now, I don't know if you ever watch any movies. What people should know about New Matt is that he is a, I don't know, are you an avid reader? Is it fair to say that you're a reader or you're a consumer of books?
I do a bit of both.
Okay. So tell people just how many books you've ingested this year. It is now only October, folks. So we're in month 10 of the year. There are two more months after this. More than 2 months left in the year. How many books have you ingested this year? Or how many did you set out to ingest?
I set out to ingest 150 on my Goodreads profile.
On his Goodreads profile. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
It's like a book logger. You can log what you're reading and what you want to read.
Okay. And where are you at?
I'm at 145.
145. Now, I'll tell you what's bizarre. When I interviewed you, which was not that long ago, because I only knew that Matt was leaving at the beginning of the month. Old Matt, it was at 133.
I think I might have estimated a bit lower than I was at. I think I've got about 5 or 6 books since then.
Ah, and you read that Hillary Clinton book from Joe Connison.
Yeah, The Hunting of Hillary.
Yeah. Now, tell people how you read. How you read.
Okay, so for instance, Joe Connison has this book available as a free PDF online. And so when I have access to the text and there's not an audiobook of a book, I take that text and I paste it into a program called Text-to-Speech Pro. And that exports that text into a robot-sounding audiobook, basically. And you can set the words per minute up to 370 words per minute, which is pretty fast. It's fast. That's like above average reading speed. And then I have another program that I can then speed that up a little bit more on. So last night I basically played Madden for 3 hours and listened to this book.
And so now do you sometimes read the books while you're listening to the audiobook as well?
Yeah, if I really want to get a grasp of a book, I'll have the text with me in front. So, like, for instance, this Joe Connison book, I don't have a complete mastery of that because there's a lot of names that I were just sounds coming from this robot voice. So if I can see, like, the way that they're spelled and that stuff, it's easier for memory.
Now, Matt, does this interfere with your social life in any ways? Do you have any friends? I mean, that's what I'm asking. It's like,
are you also concerned about the Jews?
No, I think I've actually turned a few of my friends onto this style of reading.
Really?
Actually.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's their preferred method now.
No, it's just like a bunch of geeks. Like, do you belong to like some type of geek? Is it like a geek club?
I think we're pretty cool geeks.
Oh, cool geeks. Well, I mean, that's like you're post-millennial geeks, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you're a geek. No, Kelly is refuting you. Say that again?
No, he's not a geek.
New Matt is not a geek.
Not a geek.
What?
Very cool.
Very cool. Wow.
This is very cool, very hip kind of stuff.
Oh, all right.
If the audience could see him, they would know he's a hip millennial guy, just does a lot of weird reading stuff.
And we should also say that you also have your own podcast, right? I mean, it's would you describe it as a podcast?
Yeah, I wouldn't. So I kind of ignore a lot of copyright issues with that podcast. I play music. Basically, it's the set pieces of
it. It's not a commercial podcast per se.
Right, exactly. Strictly non-commercial. And I do a bit of, it's kind of just conversations I have with my friends when I just put a mic on. And then in between those, I do this thing where I mix like Nixon or LBJ tapes. Conversations with like 80s pop songs, for instance, or just electronic music. That's kind of the show. It's called Informationer.
Informationer. Now, Kelly, do you want to reassess what you had said just 30 seconds ago about Matt?
No, I'm jealous.
Okay.
I think it's weird, but it's funny.
All right. Just asking.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, so you've heard the premise of this segment. That is, give me a movie to watch on some type of streaming service. Now, virtually everything is now streamable. When we started this segment 4 or 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. That's how quickly technology is moving. Now, also, I should say that more often than not, I have to watch the movie that Milo wants to watch because she's 10. But she's got a sleepover this weekend, so I have a decent chance of being able to watch what I want to watch. So, what do you recommend, Matt Leck, rhymes like with tech?
Nightcrawler came out in 2014, starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Nightcrawler.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kind of like an American Psycho movie, where Jake Gyllenhaal plays a sort of a Ben Carson type figure, sort of very strange, maybe. Sociopathic or on some sort of spectrum, and he drives around LA and he comes across a news cameraman at the scene of an accident and decides to go into that field, and then he gets too involved with his work.
Interesting. interesting. Sounds like he creates his own work.
Yeah, you could say that.
All right. I've already figured out the movie. It doesn't say it. But okay. All right. So Nightcrawler. Why is this a movie I'm going to enjoy? Just because...
It's just a really well-made movie. I watched a different movie called Creep right before it, and it was one of these found footage ones that cheaply made. And then directly after this, I watched Nightcrawler with my roommate, and it's just.
So what were you guys doing? Like googling like spiders, and you saw Creep, and then Nightcrawler, or what was it?
I mean, we were just on Netflix going through the suspenseful stuff, and this movie it's just nice to go from one of those movies to. I want a high budget, competent movie where everything's like this is like the state of the art in filmmaking, and I don't know enough about film to say that, but I really enjoyed it from that perspective.
All right, Nightcrawler, ladies and gentlemen, Nightcrawler. Now, Kelly. Now, how many books did you read so far this year?
Less than New Matt.
Oh, really? Not 145? So like what? 85, 70, 103?
Significantly less books total.
So you're making the I'm a little bit more normal play.
Well, as another job and for a lot of my career, I do editing. With text, so makes you a little bit less prone to read, and it is mostly online work that I've done, and it makes you a little bit too prone to be online all the time.
Yes.
So a lot of online reading and forcing myself to get offline.
I understand that. Yep. I feel the same way. So now, Kelly, what kind of movie are you suggesting that I watch?
It is a dark comedy. Mm-hmm. It's described as. I would not suggest that you watch it with your daughter. Please don't do that.
Okay. She's already seen it, would be my guess.
It's called Welcome to Me with Kristen Wiig.
Welcome to Me. I've never heard of that one either.
It's very weird.
Welcome to Me with Kristen Wiig. I mean, it's got to be a fairly recent movie, right?
It's also 2014. Oh. But it's very, she has a psychiatric history, the woman in the movie, Alice.
Okay.
And she, at the beginning of the movie, wins the lottery. She plays the lottery compulsively, watches Oprah compulsively, and then she decides that she's going to spend the money to... And so this reminds me of you, minus the psychiatric problem.
Maybe you should also reserve judgment in that accord, too.
She decides that she's going to have her own show, only it's a television show.
Oh, well, that's just the difference between winning the lottery and just...
it's very... I really like Kristen Wiig, and it's very strange humor, so...
And did she write this?
No.
It was written... No, she did not write it.
She did not write it, but it's very on brand, I think, for her. Because she's done some darker... Like, have you ever seen The Skeleton Twins?
No.
She's done some darker, more serious stuff. This is actually pretty funny and dark.
And this is from the director who did Bob Roberts and Anchorman and Step Brothers, which I never saw.
You never saw Step Brothers? Okay, I changed my recommendation.
I did not. What? Really? Step Brothers is that good?
Well, it depends on if you like Goofy or...
Can Step Brothers, can Mila watch Step Brothers?
Yeah,
I'd say so.
Give another year or two.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, well, she's 10, right? Yeah, well, let her watch when she's, I don't know. Of course she could watch it, but depends how conscientious you want to be.
But what does that mean?
Depends how conscientious you want to be.
Well, about what topics? I mean, it doesn't teach kids how to make a bomb, does it?
No.
Will Ferrell joins Al Qaeda briefly.
How much sex is involved in that film?
There's a lot of sex jokes.
Yeah.
but it's not like, oh, I guess, you know what? There is one arc. Yeah, there's a fair amount. There's a lot of sex jokes. There's a lot of sex jokes.
Myla watched, and she has, she's, I haven't even finished watching the whole thing. She's watched Wet Hot American Summer. And she thinks,
oh, then she could
hilarious.
Definitely watch Step Brothers for sure, yeah. If you let her watch that.
Oh, wow. All right.
Oh, the ship has sailed.
Oh, yeah. No, she really
just
likes
throw anything in front
well,
of her.
Well, because she's, you know, obviously she's, you know, knows John Benjamin. She's known John Benjamin for her whole life. And so she was very excited to see him. And she's also known Janine for a long time. So those first two episodes she got heavily into. And then she and Benjamin's kid wanted to watch the whole thing. So they were over and they were watching the whole series, I guess. I don't know. Didn't seem that racy to me. It was okay. She can watch two people kiss.
I was actually thinking the movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the Netflix series.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't know anything about the Netflix
series.
Because
I thought the movie was a little bit not so good.
Okay. So maybe Step Brothers would
not,
a year
not in terms
two.
Of like,
no,
I just thought quality-wise.
No, I understand. You don't like your friend's work. We get it.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I found it a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, let's... well, and so there we have it. Pretty good, I got to say, movie recommendations from our new producers. People are getting comfortable and settled in here. All right. Let's play this clip, shall we? And then we'll take some phone calls and some... all right, speaking of Ben Carson... Matt recommended a movie today that was about someone who had some psychological problems that led them to have to keep other people's well-being at arm's length, and suggested in some ways this character was reminiscent of Ben Carson. How could you say such a thing, Matt? I mean, do you really think Ben Carson is the type of guy who would publicly get up and say something like, something that supposedly everybody perceives as some type of tragic event is actually a blessing? Do you really think that Ben Carson is that type of guy? Clip number one.
You know, she, of course, and many of the Democrats are hoping her testimony puts the issue to rest. Does it?
Oh, it doesn't with me. And I got to tell you, I was shocked, really, in the 2012 election that Mr. Romney sort of let that one go. I mean, to me, that was a gift wrap present put in your lap. And I certainly would not let it go.
That's what I was going to ask you.
There you have it. Benghazi, a gift wrap present dropped in your lap, says Ben Carson. A little bit off the script, but maybe that's what helps him in Iowa. In fact, let me quote from a piece about his recent poll jumps in Iowa. Now, people are making this about Trump dropping, but Trump has only dropped a couple of points, really, in Iowa. However, Carson is in the lead now in two different Iowa polls. And what is the, where is that, where's, darn it, where did I have that quote? Son of a gun. Well, it was a funny quote about Carson as to why he jumped in Iowa. And I will paraphrase it. And that is, even his comments on Hitler... abortion and Benghazi have helped him with Iowa Republican voters. I can't find it. Sorry, folks. I deny you that gold.
It's in your IMs.
It is. Okay. Here it is. Even Carson's most controversial comments about Muslims, Hitler, and slavery are attractive to likely Republican caucus goers. The poll shows just two perceived weaknesses: his lack of foreign policy experience, you know, because his domestic policy experience is so extensive, and his research using fetal tissue during his medical career.
The stuff about Hitler, Muslims, and slavery? Give us more. That's unbelievable. No, it's not unbelievable. What am I saying? It's totally believable. It's the most believable thing. It's the most believable thing I think I've heard all week.
I could share with you how I would respond in an embassy attack if you would care to hear it.
Yes, I would love to hear that.
One time I was in an embassy attack in a scenario where I had gone to Pakistan to perform a surgery, wound up in the embassy. See, I like to take a very, very, very long time to set up the premise of my stories. Speed forward. There was a terrorist group that had decided, apparently, that they were going to attack the embassy. And when they approached me, I said, I'm a member of the cooking staff, and I think who you want is a guy. I didn't even know him much, but I said, I think that that's the head of the CIA office at the consulate, knowing that they would probably be very poorly disposed towards him. And they rushed him, and to make a long story short, they actually burned and charred his body. And I was able to leave Pakistan. So that's how I would respond. That's how I would deal with an embassy attack that I might find myself involved in. And if God had personally chosen to torture and have a bunch of embassy staff members killed personally for me in my presidential bid, you could bet that I would use it to my maximum political advantage, unlike Mitt Romney.
Well, you know what they say about Mitt Romney. No brain surgeon. You're calling from a 651 area code. Who's this? Who's this? 651 area code. Who's this? Hello? I hear you breathing. Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? All right. We'll move on. You're calling from a 484 area code. Who's this? Maybe the problem.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, hello?
Hello? You're on the show.
Yes, Sam?
Yes, who's this?
Yes, hello, Sam.
Yes.
This is Jared.
Hi, Jared. How are you?
Jared, pretty good. I'm one of the IMers, Jared Munteep, specifically, not Munith, or whatever you say.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
I'm here to talk about Obama's recent veto of NDAA.
Okay.
He said he wanted to veto all of the NDAA bills that ever came up, but this is the first one he's ever actually vetoed. And it's kind of amazing just how, you know, hypocritical he is, because I remember, like, I was a teenager when he first got, you know, into office, like 16 years old. And around, I think it was it December 2000? Yeah, it was December 31st, 2011. And I remember there was a bill called NDAA 2012.
The NDAA.
There was a part of it that
right.
said, yeah, the NDAA 2012. And it had a section in it that said, that you can basically be arrested for any reason whatsoever. Government doesn't matter what you do. It's basically just, you know, take you off.
That's a slight exaggeration, but I know what you're referring to. I mean, there was provisions in there that would have a very chilling effect on the press and on potentially on protests.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and, well, I think he used, well, Chris Hedges said he basically is just going to use it just to arrest dual Pakistani American citizens as a way to justify that. So I don't think he's ever actually used the term Americans per se.
Well, I mean, if they are American citizens and they also are Pakistani citizens, then they are American citizens. But I don't know that it's been used that way. I've never seen news reports that it's been used that way. But certainly, it's written in such a way that, like, it may or may not offer the opportunity to other presidents or to this president. And so, yes. But you think it's hypocritical because he has vetoed this one, and in part, my understanding is that one, it's because it keeps in place or creates new obstacles to him closing Guantanamo, the Guantanamo Bay prison, because you need to transfer those prisoners somewhere, and in some instances, you can't find countries to repatriate these people. In some instances. Less than the majority of the cases there is a real concern that these people are actually in some way a potential danger to the country, even though we apparently have forfeited our ability and their ability to get a fair trial, I should say. And if you can't, house them in a prison facility in the United States, proper, then, you know, what do you do with these people? You can't just, like, put them in a boat and push them off the coast of Cuba. So he's vetoed it for that. And also, my understanding is there's an attempt by the Republicans to get around sequestration only for the military cuts as opposed to the cuts across the board. And so if you allow them to increase the military budget and get around sequestration, you lose all your leverage to get funding returned to those discretionary parts of the budget that actually help people. So you have a problem with the hypocrisy. Would you feel better in this instance if he just signed that bill, allowing these obstacles to remain in there to closing Guantanamo and providing the runaround for sequestration?
No, I think you're misinterpreting what I said. I would have preferred if he had vetoed. I liked his veto. I loved his veto. I wish he had done it more often.
Oh, definitely.
I wish he had vetoed all of the NDAA bills. I mean, where was he? Well, okay, let's go over all the NDAA bills real quick.
Well, wait a second. Okay. Let's not go over all of them. I agree with what you're saying. And it's the lament is not the hypocrisy. The lament is that we didn't see this from him before. Look, here's the thing. My feeling is this. Because we're at the end of his presidency and he's not going to run again, and now that Joe Biden is not going to run as well, like the intentions and these questions as to why he's doing what he does are less relevant to me. And because I'm happy that he vetoed this, I hope that he continues to veto these things and doesn't allow it. I don't think he's doing it for political gain. I don't think much people know about it right now, frankly. And maybe there's a longer theory here. And maybe to a certain extent, you know, he doesn't have Joe Biden. He's not listening to Joe Biden tell him to be all partisan or bipartisan or whatever it is. I have no idea. And yes, I lament the fact that there was a lot of things, particularly on the NDA, the worst parts of it in terms of how it infringes upon our civil liberties that he had dealt with. But the guy was not great on civil liberties. I mean, he's just not. He wasn't great on government transparency. He was really bad on whistleblowing. I think he was really bad when it comes to things like targeted assassination. A lot of that law was established sort of behind, and we don't even know really what those laws are. They're just documents manufactured in the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel. So there's a lot of issues that he's bad on. And, you know, I'm glad. I see it as a bonus. If we can get anything good out of this guy, he's vetoing right now. I will always remain skeptical as to the reasons behind it. But, you know, at the end of the day, who take the good stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, you know, I just wish you would, you know, veto things more often. Because now he's only doing it. Okay, let's be clear here. He's only doing this really because there's like a Republican Congress. Like, you know, okay, well, I can now stand up to the Republicans. If a Democratic Congress had passed something like this, he would have probably.
I got news for you. I can tell you something. A Democratic Congress, I could definitely see passing some form of blocks to Guantanamo, although maybe today we wouldn't see that. But I can assure you that to the extent that and make no mistake here, he doesn't necessarily have a problem with the increase in defense spending. He has a problem with giving that up and not getting back the other discretionary spending. And if it was a democratically controlled Congress, you would have never had the sequester in the first place. And you certainly, if you got a democratically controlled Congress tomorrow, you'd have the sequester reversed. You'd see an increase in the defense spending, definitely, or not definitely, but most likely, you know, by the Democrats. But you would also see an increase in the discretionary spending. So I appreciate the phone call, though.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
And again, it's, you know, you're talking motivation to some extent. And look, I got no problem if somebody is motivated by just doing it because the Republicans are doing it. If the end product is something that I like, I'm not terribly concerned about how, you know, what the motivation is to put this thing in the sausage, as it were, so to speak, if you will. Calling from a 647 area code. Who's this?
Hi, this is Benny Cougarand calling from Toronto again.
Benny Cougarand, how are you? From Toronto again.
I'm doing okay. Yep, that's right.
What's up?
I just wanted to give a little more context to your listeners about the recent outcome of the election year.
Please do.
All right. So your caller the other day from Manitoba.
Right.
Old guy, old time NDP. A lot of the old time base of the NDP would probably be characterized in the United States as kind of, you know, Reagan Democrats, right? Like, a lot of the labor left that was bled off during the Reagan years stuck with the NDP because they had more or less their own party, right?
I don't know about that. Reagan Democrats. I don't know if that's fair, but go ahead.
Well, not entirely, but there's still a lot of, you know, like less good on social issues, but staunch labor supporters who stuck with the NDP. There's some tension in the caucus because of that. But the one thing that caller is absolutely right on is the Liberals do have a history of running to the left and then governing to the right. One thing he didn't mention was the last time the Liberals were successful in bleeding off recent NDP successes and surge in the polls and ended up with a majority government after a long period of conservative rule, they actually took a plank from the NDP's platform, which was to run hard against NAFTA. And then as soon as they got a majority government, they went ahead and signed NAFTA.
Mm.
So there's a bit of history with that. You know, they do have a lot of strength in areas that are heavily rural and in areas that have a lot of resource industry jobs. And those places, the social attitudes can be, you know, somewhat regressive. Now, a lot of the NDP's base is also grassroots anti-poverty social justice organizing, and that's been a lot more important recently. The other big thing that changed the makeup of the NDP was in the election previously in 2011. They ended up with a massive surge in support in Quebec, and this brings the whole weirdness of Quebec politics into it, but they actually ended up with a majority of the caucus in Quebec, whereas previous to that, they'd only had one NDP MP elected ever in Quebec, and that was Thomas Mulcair.
Hmm.
That's pretty much why he ended up as leader. He was essentially the only choice because he was the only NDP MP with any experience from Quebec. He had a little bit of baggage in that respect, in that he was previously a cabinet minister in the provincial government there. And the provincial government he was a part of was actually more of a neoliberal party, more like the Liberal Party federally. He was actually a member of the provincial Liberal.
With cabinet. With this background, I mean, give us a slug line for what you anticipate, the Liberal rule to look like in Canada.
Well, I think it's going to be a lot more neoliberal orthodoxy than people are expecting, as it's happened in the past. For one thing, they didn't even run against the PPP in this election. And I think you can expect the PPP to not receive any significant pushback from them, which is bad because it has a lot of bad provisions in terms of data security and data privacy in Canada, as well as copyright term extensions and patent term extensions.
All the problems that we have.
And also it has some provisions that are going to... Yeah, and it also has a big problem that's going to devastate our auto sector, which is the only manufacturing sector of any significant importance left in Canada. But that's neither here nor there, actually. What I really wanted to mention is something that I haven't heard brought up, which is the role that racism played in the election and blatant race baiting by the conservatives that might have actually ended up backfiring, but kind of in an unusual way.
All right, just tell us quickly about that.
So basically, the conservatives played hard this issue of the... And it seems absurd and silly, but whether or not women could wear the niqab during their citizenship ceremony. And
women could wear what during their citizenship?
The niqab, the Muslim veil.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And to Mulcair's credit, he, despite the fact that there's a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment in Quebec, and his own riding, the demographics would be probably similar to, it's Montreal's equivalent of Crown Heights. And he stuck to his guns, almost at the cost of losing his own riding, and saying that it was a racist policy to prohibit it, and... it cost him a lot of support in Quebec. And when that happened, the large group of Liberal NDP swing voters who were just looking for anyone who could beat Harper saw that he was losing support in Quebec where he needed it the most. He needed to keep those seats. And when they saw that support declining, the tides really started to turn. And then this was amplified by the fact that the media, which is extremely corporate and extremely concentrated in a few very large corporations that are heavily integrated in other industries like telecom and pulp and paper and forestry, hate the NDP and turned on them in an instant. As soon as it looked like it was they were in third place in the polls, it was a two-way race, and they were essentially ignored. I think that played a big role in the outcome that you saw. And a lot of people made maybe ill-advised strategic votes to vote for the Liberals, even in ridings where there really wasn't a chance the Conservative would win. Ridings like mine, where really the only candidates with a chance of being elected were either the Liberal or the NDP. And I lost my NDP MP, who I really liked, and I was expecting to be reelected easily, but it looks like a lot of people who don't really understand the riding dynamics decided to vote strategically for the Liberal for fear of the Conservative, and she ended up losing the seat.
Interesting. My sense is that happened across the country quite a bit, actually. But
It did. It really did.
Well, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for the update. Got to jump.
Yeah, no problem.
Bye. Neff. Am so happy to have Classic Kelly as part of the MR team. It's quite beyond time. We have a female voice on a daily basis. Enlightened as my boys are, sometimes it does get slightly overly testosterone-y in the office.
Even when Sam's talking?
Not insinuating anything. Just happy to have you, Kelly.
Jazz and potatoes. Love the conversation about the Clinton conspiracy theories, but I guess I still don't understand why they are targeted this way versus others. I know there's a bunch of conspiracies about Obama, but the Clintons seem to be the first huge targets and still are, and I really don't get it. I think there's a couple of reasons. One, I think it's just bad timing for them. I think that the era of conservative media happened along when Bill Clinton did, and a lot of this was established there. The reason why they are attacked is, frankly, I think it's twofold. One, I think the Republicans were really, really angry about Bill Clinton because, remember, he won his first presidency with less than 50% of the vote. And so there was, I think, an intense anger about that. They also, the time that he won, there was also, you know, you had Republican leaders getting up and criticizing Murphy Brown for having a single, being a single woman with her own child. And here's a guy who was messing around, you know, being adulterous as he was running. This was the accusations against him. And so here he was, an immoral guy who wins with less than 50% of the vote. And I think there was also an anger because in some ways he was, do you really not know who Murphy Brown is?
No. Why would I know who Murphy Brown is?
Do you guys, none of you guys know who Murphy Brown is?
Yeah, I've heard that story.
Okay. Murphy Brown was a TV show. And I think it was it Candace Bergen who was the was Murphy Brown? It was a very famous TV show, and she was a newscaster, or she worked in a news department. And at one point, late in the thing, they wrote in that she was going to have a child on her own. And
what?
Dan Quayle, the vice presidential candidate, you know, got up and said, "This is a horror for the country," and
And, like during an election cycle.
Yes. And okay. This is also when Pat Buchanan got up there at the Republican National Convention. We're in the midst of a culture war. I mean, this is when it was growing and this like adulterer wins. Now, simultaneous to that, Bill Clinton came in and the Washington establishment also did not like this guy because he was coming from a small state. Outside of the Beltway, and I think to a certain extent he also didn't have strong liberal support because he was coming from the corporate sort of wing of the Democratic Party, and so there was very little pushback. There was very little mechanism for pushback. This was the growth of Fox News at this time. This was the growth of right wing radio at this time, and so. What you had is just sort of all these things, sort of the perfect storm to come together. And I think, you know, Obama was spared some of this, but just some of it. I mean, you know, Reverend Wright, his birth certificate, all these things. I think the fact that he was African-American made it more complicated and inspired more people to stand up and say, hey, this is inappropriate. and I think also, you know, partly because he was so young, he didn't have the same sort of record. You know, as a governor, it's much easier to find like sort of dirt on people, mechanical dirt. You know what I'm saying? Like in terms of the mechanics of having governed, there's a lot more stories to which to build upon. I will also say that I think Obama was helped in many respects because of like things like blogs and there being some other forms of media to push back on this stuff. And I would also add that when you come from Arkansas, from the governorship to the presidency, you bring a lot of your people, right? And they're just not used to playing on a national stage. If you don't have those people, like Obama did, you bring in professionals who are from Washington who know how to play that game. And if they've either been through it already with the Clintons or they just have been working in Washington. And so he's surrounded with those people. I mean, I think after this Benghazi thing, it's going to be much harder to build another Benghazi around Hillary. I think the first one would have been hard if it hadn't been started during the Obama administration. I would also add that their intensity of hatred for Hillary matches that of Bill, because she was also the first lady who threatened this notion of how a first lady should be. You know, Michelle Obama, in many respects, has not gotten the grief from a feminist perspective that Hillary did, because A, Hillary was there and tried to assume a policy role. B, like, she also learned, like, not to take as overt of a policy role. You know, she was, and she's gotten a tremendous amount of grief. But it hasn't stuck in the same way. Although, you know, you remember, like, when Michelle took a trip to Europe, you know, that was going to be the big scandal. It's just, these things don't have the sticking power that they used to have. And in terms of the media. So, it's not just that Clintons are they were the first huge targets, and the reason why they still are is because they're still around. And that's basically it. Chem Champion, I found the discussion earlier this week about the definition of propaganda be tedious. But as you say, the dictionary definition should prevail. Merriam-Webster, savant, a person of learning, person affected with... especially one with detailed knowledge in some special area. I think you're thinking of idiot savant, which is a person affected with... Oh, okay. So savant is okay. But it doesn't express the fact that Ben Carson lacks any... is sort of like an inverse savant when it comes to politics, it seems to me. Henry Kissinger's vocal fry. Is it me or does Gowdy look like DuPont from Foxcatcher? Also, too, mint the $1 trillion coin... Trey Gowdy, House Elf, welcome to me, is Andy Kaufman-esque. Reagan in the Money, here's the twist. The shooter was, what's this? If you haven't reported on this, here are the highlights. Corey Jones was stuck on the highway waiting for a tow truck. A man in plain clothes van pulls up. Corey Jones' body was found 80 to 100 feet away from his car, which means he was probably running. Here's the twist. The shooter was Newman Rajah. Rajah was disciplined 3 times as his last job as a cop. Twice for mishandling evidence. Have a nice weekend. Rajah was technically undercover when he came across Corey Jones. Billy Buckner, are third-way politicians government equivalent to modern-day CEOs? Do they just focus on trading the work of activists to get a few short-term deals they can pocket into their legacy or bank account? I mean, I think there's something to that. Hugo Ball. Sam, thanks again for the discussion. At least the Bushies were job-creating when we need to grudgingly accept that. By the 90s, the conspiracy theory industry was hemorrhaging gun nut racists and creepy mustache dudes to an almost fatal degree. Martin in NYC. Paul Ryan's supposed appeasement of the knuckle-draggers in the House is the most transparent display of media whoring I've seen in a long time, and predictably, the media ate it up. If there really are two schools of right-wing crazy, his second act, My Family Comes First, you know me, we'd all get a lesson in lazy. If it came from the left, typical liberals, don't want to work, they want handouts. Yes. DX Fool, hi folks, it should be noted the last debate only one candidate has always been a Democrat. 3 of them are ex-Republicans, including Goldwater girl Hillary. Could you ask Cliff on Ring of Fire when he thinks his area Congressman John Boehner will get a lobbying or a consulting gig? I would say 30 seconds after he leaves his office. Dolink, watched an entire 11 hours. They spent so much time on Blumenthal. Dems said release Blumenthal deposition transcript. Republicans voted no. Schiff from California said the reason they want release because of questions they asked. Few about Benghazi, most about Clinton Foundation. All right, do we have that Schiff clip? Maybe we should get that Shift clip. We'll try it for Monday. Big Dan Wynn. Boy, that guy from the Hair Club for Men commercials was really mad at Hillary yesterday. Any union leadership that endorses Hillary over Bernie should be outed by their members. Nothing in the election thus far has infuriated as much as Randy Weingarten just throwing in the whole union behind Hillary without so much as a vote. Yeah. Lucifer, the new MR producer voices remind me of a little of the NSL Shweddy Ball sketch with Alec Baldwin. Is that considered vocal fry? Kidding aside, you both sound good. Almost too good. Iron Shink, Paul Ryan should have had another condition for sponsorship, that someone from the Freedom Caucus make him sack lunch every day so that he knows someone loves him. International Herald, hard to concentrate on anything. My friends in Puerto Vallarta all have been evacuated. They are anticipating in Mexico the largest hurricane in the history of the Western Hemisphere, is my understanding. It's making a landfall in the next few hours. So I understand, Harold. Could be very, very ugly. Black Beaten, a must-see movie, Beasts of No Nation. Thrilled that so many racists are vowing to boycott so many awesome things I hold dear. First Star Wars 7 for having another black Jedi, and now Captain America for being black. Yeah, I have those stories. I didn't get to them quite yet. Cal Socialist, the Majority Report should produce a Jimmy Reefer CD cake and sell them on the website. Shank Steele, is it wrong to like Reefer Cake songs and hate that he sounds like Sandler? Nick DC, I seem to recall an interview where Hillary said she does not perspire. Tough spot for the inquisitors under the TV lights. CC Prof, AFSCME is not the first public sector union to endorse Clinton, both the AFT and the NEA. Yes. As an AFT member and local officer, I am hopping mad about this endorsement, but the unions aren't listening. I'd love it if you get an analyst to talk about what's happening between the unions and Clinton. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's keep our eyes open for somebody in the Jacobin, maybe, I bet. Majority Report listener, did you hear the beginning of Harold Watson Gowdy from the third saying half a hundred? Who says that? As a Bernie supporter, Hillary looks great likely. Perhaps no one else gets that you can't deal with these psycho idiots as much as her and Bill. It's true. AJS93. Good Lord, the fun hour is now going to be explaining the 90s to millennials in the office now? It's like story time with Sam Cedar. God, I'm old. To the millennials, I mean, Kelly and replace Matt, don't even know the controversy pantsuits used to cause. Where's the Michael Steele audio? Matt, got to get that. It's in the Nighthawk. It's a pretty great movie theater, says B. Benjamin. MATLEC, like tech, the abbreviation for technology. MATLEC, shake my head. Sick Nichols, new Matt, faux pas, dude. Listening to a book is not reading. Also, please let Kelly know Mein Kampf is available as an audiobook via the method Matt described. He may be able to hook you up with a robotic voice and a German accent, too. Great leap forward. Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, Kelly's upset.
I'm not upset. I just am not willing to make this a running joke that I have anything against Jews, because I don't.
Whatever you
think, I don't think any of us find it to really be a joke, Kelly. We're kind of disturbed by it, actually.
She didn't have her headphones on. That's why I got to keep the headphones on.
Wait, so, Kelly, you're etched in ideas, huh?
I love Kelly's new character for the show, pageant-winning Chewbacca. It's a winner. I'm not sure I get that. KC Humanist, welcome to Kelly and new Matt. I support Matt's pick of Nightcrawler. It's a great indictment of local news. Chris Lopaco, I read new Matt like new Matt does, but I do it for articles. I copy the whole article, paste it into text-speech for software, and Stephen Hawking reads it to me while I search for other stuff. Another tip is to watch, listen to lectures on YouTube at double speed. Also, did you get to talk to about Cummings versus Gowdy? I tuned in late. No, we didn't get to it. We're not going to get time to that today. Jez Garjley, how can Bernie call himself a socialist if he supports the military interventionism in Middle East and beyond? Isn't socialism against militarism in any form?
Not necessarily.
Univision, Nightcrawler, and Welcome to Me are very good films. Andrew Dice Scalia voice, I got your sack lunch right here, Paul Ryan.
Mighty Max received an email from MoveOn.org. They're asking members to submit a question for the DNC-approved forum they're hosting in November. What question would you guys like to ask the four candidates? What are the greatest distinctions between you and the other candidates on economic policy? Censor sweep. I used to have a bit of a thrift store problem. My ex used to make me keep new purchases in the freezer for at least a week. Bradbot, I convert MR podcast to text and then back to audio, so I've already read over 200 books. Jim Botex, I can't believe you guys are even bothering to continue with this show. Hitler's doctors said he was Persian. Hitler's doctors, plural, doctors, Hitler, Persian. The mic has been dropped. Boom.
He was Persian, if I could do a Doug impression.
Born Blue, Welcome to Me was directed by my high school friend, Shira Piven, sister of Jeremy. She's married to Adam McKay, who directed Step Brothers and those other films. Ah, hey, Kristen Wiig was just nominated for a Gotham Independent Film for her performance in Welcome to Me. Joan Cusack's in it, too. Haven't seen it yet, but looks pretty good. There you go. Cyberstrike. Good show today. I've got a question. Where do myths that Clinton is a secret progressive, she can be pulled from the left to come from? Well, no. I didn't say that she's a secret progressive. No. I don't know if there are myths that she's a secret progressive. I just think that she can be pushed in terms of political expediency. I mean, look, the reality is that her coming out against TPP has an impact. She's not in a position to do anything about it now, but it does put pressure on senators, Democratic senators, in the Senate to vote against it. Now, it's not clear that the vote's going to come up before the election. And then in which case she reverses as president, I think that's not an unlikely scenario if the vote doesn't come up. But all I'm saying is that that in and of itself, coming out against TPP, if there is a vote, that has value to us as progressives. That's all I'm saying. Netflix. This exists, Zombievers, and this is my suggestion to you guys. Homer 3D. Nightcrawler is a great movie. Jake Gyllenhaal character is what I feel the perfect definition of a Republican job creator would look like. I connote excitement. Charles Atlas, newer generation, probably know it mostly from references in Rocky Horror Picture Show. Nathan Ray, Sam, your sound and video is out of sync on YouTube. Ask one of the newbies to set the keyframe to 1 second to see if that fixes it. I've noticed that. We're going to talk about that. I wasn't sure if it was just me or what. Bendejo, tell Jared we want all 12 inches, damn it. I don't know what that means. Somebody else. In the last round of yesterday's Gowdy Duty Show, GOP Rep Pompous Pompano forced Senator Clinton to answer a series of yes-no questions about her knowledge of CIA. Gun running out of the Benghazi consulate. The missing link. Not too sure why Michael Brooks stuck the creepster label on Jeb Bush for saying 27-year-old Melissa Boynist is hot because she is.
Who said that? I said she was creepy.
We put that title on the thing. I changed it.
Oh. You said he was creepy.
Yeah, I think he came off as creepy.
Well, she's talking about a teenage character, right? Isn't that the whole premise of why you call him creepy?
He also just comes off as creepy because he just seems to be forcing it in some way.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know what? I also sort of think that, like, I don't know. I found it a little bit creepy.
I thought it was awkward and bizarre. I mean, I guess you could throw creepy in there, too.
All right. Whatever. Let's just go to, we'll change it.
It doesn't matter. No, leave creepy goes up. That's for, a silly AM. Who cares?
In the spirit of Friday movie recommendation, I highly recommend the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune. Alejandro Jodorowsky's ultimately failed attempt to make a film version of the novel Dune. Worth watching. Melancholy. Also, they hated Hillary because she was a career woman who initially kept her own name. Yes.
Chesmarta Stamp, speaking of Murphy Brown, Sam, are you still bummed out that Grant Shoud beat you out for the part of Media Jews, Miles Silverberg? Did you ever even get a callback? Was that on that show? I don't think I ever got an audition for that. The lack of female balance word wouldn't be testronery. Rhyming with macaroni, it would be testosteronic. Rhyming with moronic, says Impetigotica. Jimmy Reefer Cake, I'm on the line, hoping you have a couple of minutes. I don't think we do. I'm sorry, Jimmy. Max Payne, Sam, did you see John Kerry's announcement about his conversation with Bibi? What a convoluted pill of garbage. I didn't. Jay Tingle, everyone is welcome to me. Welcome to me. I like Jennifer J. Lee's performance. Not sure they needed Tim Roberts. My wife stopped watching that movie halfway through. Her brother is schizophrenic and doesn't enjoy watching people acting out in their illness. Tough for that to be in a funny movie. Watch The Duke of Burgundy, a movie with only women, written and directed by a man. Blue 2080C, what's up with YouTube Red? I don't know. I've got to look into that. And the final IM of the day of the week. Beast Olba, as usual, NPR failed to mention the millions of wasted tax dollars, tampered emails, or the 7 prior investigations into this morning's analysis of Hillary's ordeal. All right, folks, see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. I don't know how.